This podcast is brought to you by the Legatum Institute. I'm Sian Hansen, Executive Director, and we hope you enjoy this lecture.
Good evening and welcome very much to the Legatum Institute. I'm Sian Hansen, the Executive Director here. And firstly, we'd like to thank our sponsors for tonight, the British Venture Capital Association. Yay, without them, this event couldn't have happened. So we're really, really grateful. Tonight, we are delighted to host Boris Johnson, Mayor of London. Boris is here to launch our latest program, The Vision of Capitalism, led by Tim Montgomery, Senior Legatum Fellow. Before I hand over to Tim, just a few words about us. The Legatum Institute is an international think tank, an educational charity, and our mission is to promote prosperity. We do this through a host of programs. They include our annual signature publication, the Prosperity Index. It ranks 142 countries through wealth and well-being. We are exceedingly proud of this. Our Transitions Forum, which looks at how to help countries through to democracy. And our historian, Hal Williams, who I hope is in the room tonight, he leads our Culture of Prosperity. And our latest program on character and values is run by Christina Adone, who I know is here.
Yep.
Now, tonight, we will hear from Britain's two most influential politicians and political thinkers. Boris Johnson, Mayor of London since 2008, is so famous that he's known from Westminster to Washington by his first name, just Boris. The man who brought us the most successful Olympic Games in history, the Boris bikes, we all know. He got rid of those bendy buses. He's a fine classicist, and may I say, a peerless ping pong player. His popularity, and may I say, maybe even cult status, means that with Boris on board, even the most audacious vision can be realized. And let us be clear, Tim Montgomery's vision of capitalism is exactly that. Legatum Institute is absolutely thrilled that Tim Montgomery, the Times columnist and the founder of Conservative Home, is working for us to deliver an agenda for the next government to restore faith in the free market. And now I'd like to hand over to Tim.
All right. Well,
thank you very much for the introduction, Sian, and it's a real privilege to have been invited to join the Legatum Institute. It's a fantastic organisation with great staff, and I thank all of them here tonight for the warm welcome that they've given me. Quite an occasion tonight. I invite my mum, dad, sister to lots of political events. They never say yes, even when I'm speaking, but they come to hear Boris Johnson. And there's one thing you cannot leave without doing, Boris, tonight, and that's have a selfie with them. So I'm sure you'll be doing one or two of those over the next few weeks. Let me start with a question for you. Where in the world is belief in capitalism and its capacity for future wealth creation highest? Great Britain? The United States? No. It's the Socialist Republic of Vietnam. The Pew Research Center found that you have to go to the developing world and often to former communist countries to find the greatest confidence in the likelihood that wealth will continue to cascade down the generations. America, and to a much greater extent, Europe, have become pessimistic places. And sometimes, as we can see at the door, angry places. It's little wonder in every bookshop there are tomes attacking capitalism for the inequality it allegedly causes and for the beautiful environments it rapes. These authors perhaps have forgotten the Soviet Union and the real extremes of income and pollution that created. The arts are no better, of course, with Hollywood regularly portraying business people as rapacious wolves. It's time, my friends, for capitalism to fight back. Time to say that loss and bankruptcy are the dirty words, not profit. that stagnation and unemployment, rather than growth and enterprise, are the things we should fear. But it's also for us to be friends of capitalism, to sometimes be critical friends. Not everything is right about how capitalism operates today. Capitalism has many names in popular discourse. They're used interchangeably, sometimes sloppily. Its friends will think of markets and free enterprise. Its enemies will think of big business and a system that favours the rich. My answer would be to think of capitalism as philosophy rooted in human creativity. It's the system that enables us to be what God the Creator intended us to be. All made in his image, we are here on earth to continue the creative mission he finished on the sixth day, to build, to invent, to craft. You don't have to be of religious faith to know that creativity is part of who we are, and is a great regret that we don't celebrate creativity as we should. Lord Hailsham got it right 20 years ago when in 1992 he came and spoke at a conference I organised then on the creation of wealth. I've been at this task for some time. He said, "The great advances which have been made in human happiness have been just as much due to the spinning jenny, the internal combustion engine, and the generation of steam as to the moral sublimity of a Shaftesbury, a Florence Nightingale, an Elizabeth Fry, or a Mother Teresa." The world, of course, doesn't think like this. The most revered people are the wealth distributors rather than its creators. They are the people who proclaim their good intentions at every turn, but good intentions aren't enough. Societies are at their best when they are led by Adam Smith's invisible hand. We wake up not only wanting to create wealth, but in doing so, we create the goods and services that benefit all of humanity. It's not from the benevolence of the butcher, the brewer, or the baker that we expect our dinner, said Smith, but from their regard to their own interest. Smith, the intellectual father of capitalism, was so much more than an economist, however. He was a moral philosopher. He saw capitalism in its social context, as the Gartam Institute does with its annual prosperity index, an index that measures the prosperity of society in terms of its social strength, its security, and its public services, as well as its material riches. Adam Smith saw the role in his theory of moral sentiments. He saw the role that social institutions play in preparing people for capitalism. He understood that virtuous, industrious citizens that capitalism needs were formed in families and communities, that government and law were necessary to stop businesses conspiring against the public interest. Read Smith, and you know that economics is so much more than graphs and statistics and equations. It's not the dismal science, it's a moral mission. That's what capitalists and friends must recapture. We must stop talking in just statistical and accountancy terms. We must describe capitalism in moral terms. We must describe it as the system where every person can profit from innovation, where consumers, not producers, have the upper hand, where the rich can get poorer as well as the poor get richer, where no institution, because it has crony relations with the state, is too big to fail. Capitalism must be a system as well where the wealthy understand that riches bring responsibilities as well as rights, that the ideal citizen will do as Wesley encouraged, earn as much as you can, yes, save as much as you can, but give as much as you can as well. You can clap if you would like to. Capitalism needs virtuous citizens to flourish. Adam Smith understood that. So must we if we are to ensure that British, American, and other people in advanced countries are as optimistic about the future as the people of the Socialist Republic of Vietnam. Someone who is never anything but optimistic is the Mayor of London. I give you Boris Johnson.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you very much. Well, thank you very much, everybody. It's a great honour and a pleasure to be here tonight for this very, very important venture. And Tim, to be speaking with you, you are the force of, I would say, the moral rearmament of conservative economic thinking, and we're all seriously in your debt. As I fought my way in, it's absolutely true, as I fought my way in past the protesters just now, one of them said to me, "Oi, Boris," he said, he was a slightly crusty individual, he said, "Oi, Boris, tell them the truth. Tell them the truth about equality in our country and about the hidden statistics." It's absolutely true, it's absolutely what he said. And tell them the truth about what is happening. That is indeed what I propose to do. I'm going to tell you just one statistic tonight. One fact I want you to hold in your minds, I'll come to very shortly, that proves not just the efficiency of free market capitalism, but which reminds us that according to the most important criterion of all, it is capitalism that is today ensuring that our society is fairer, juster, more happy, and, wait for it, more equal. More equal. And if you want to know what I mean, you'll know that life expectancy in our city has massively improved just in the last 7 years, to pick a period entirely at random. There are parts of the Harrow Road where life expectancy at birth is about 97 years old, no doubt because they live on monkey glands or apricots and yogurt or whatever. But average life expectancy for both men and women in London, average life expectancy, this is the great news, my friends, average life expectancy has gone up by about 18 months since 2008. You live longer under the Conservatives, right? And that is a gift beyond price. That's a gift beyond price. 18 more months to dandle the grandchildren and make jam and take up hand gliding and slow clap politicians and use your freedom pass. 18 more months to pose naked for Women's Institute calendars and 18 more months, of course, in which to participate in elections, a very important consideration for some of us. And if you add all those extra months together, those millions of extra months, we are becoming a society that is vastly richer in life, in the most precious and brutally rationed commodity of all. We're becoming richer in time. And yet what few people realize is that this increase in chronological wealth of Londoners is not being experienced equally across all income groups, my friends. No. The recent increase in life expectancy is accruing fastest in the lowest socioeconomic groups, so that we are finally seeing a reduction in the shameful gap in life expectancy between Kensington and Chelsea on the one hand and Barking and Dagenham on the other. 7 years ago, as I say, to pick a period entirely at random, that gap was about 6 years. It's now down to 4 years. Now, you can never be complacent about what we are achieving. There is much more to be done. We've got to keep investing in housing and in supporting people's incomes in all sorts of ways. But I think we at least need to understand, given that this miracle is taking place, we need to understand why it is happening. And there are at least three crucial respects in which I think we can be grateful for this longevity, that we live in a dynamic, open, free market, capitalist economy. Number one, it was the invisible hand of the market, Adam Smith's invisible hand, that had endowed this city progressively over the last 150 years with ever more high-value jobs that do not involve life-shortening labour in docks and in mills and so on. We now have, you know, we have more people in financial services than any other city on earth, 320,000 to 330,000, but in the last few years, we've seen this extraordinary explosion of the tech sector that now employs about 500,000 people. Point two, food. Capitalism has given us infinitely better food, I think you'll agree, ingenious distribution centers, infinitely competitive and innovative supermarkets. I remember what the food was like in the 1970s, and it was terrible, wasn't it? You could go to restaurants in London, and you were all far too young and thrusting to remember the 1970s, but you go to restaurants in London, and you would be seriously offered, as a starter, half a grapefruit in a steel bowl. We have come a long, long way. And one of the reasons, by the way, that we are seeing such a dramatic fall in deaths by fire, Do you know this? We've seen huge reductions in death by fire, and that's because Londoners are no longer accidentally and drunkenly carbonising themselves in late-night chip pan fires, because the range of late-night food is so fantastic and so wonderful. We have, as I never tire of telling you, more Michelin-starred restaurants than Paris itself, a statistic I haven't bothered to verify recently, but I'm sure I'm prepared to do so. Third, so it's the labour conditions, it's the diet, but of course the third most important function of the capitalist economy is that it has helped us, it has funded the creation of the environment, the whole support system for this prodigious longevity. We have better healthcare. We've brought crime down hugely just in the last 5 or 6, 7 years. The murder rate is 5 years. 5 years down about 20% in the country as a whole. The murder rate in London now at levels not seen since the 1960s. We're putting in, with bus crime, as I never tire of telling you, bus crime down about 50% since I was elected. That's obviously crime committed on buses rather than crime committed by buses, which we've more or less eradicated. We are putting in quite amazing transport improvements on a scale not seen. The improvements in mass transit are on a scale and a quality not seen since the Victorian epoch. And you are seeing, as a consequence of all these things, you're seeing improvements in that vital quality of life. Air quality, which the BBC moan about so much. Let me tell you, PM10s, PM2.5s, the really nasty dust stuff, is down by about 15%. NOx is down by about 20%. The other day we had a bad pollution episode in London, and actually the air in Norfolk was worse than the air in London. And the day is not far off when the children of Norfolk will be bussed in to inhale great gulfs of air from Hyde Park Corner. We're planting tens of thousands of trees, we're greening up our parks, we're doing all sorts of things, we're encouraging more cycling, and all the things that you, we're putting in an ultra-low emission zone by 2020, all the things you know about. Now, how are we funding those investments? How are we making those changes? How are we, by having a strong and a growing economy? And if I may now descend into a party political rant, which I think I can, since we've just launched an election campaign. I'm sorry to hijack your event. I'm sorry to hijack your event, Tim, but I hope that there will be at least some Conservatives here in this room tonight who will hear what I have to say. It is that strong and growing economy which is the absolute prerequisite for the tax yield that will always be necessary in any civilized society to pay for the poorest and the neediest. And the problem with Ed Miliband is not that he doesn't understand the cares and the pains of the poorest and the neediest. Of course he does. What he doesn't understand is the absolute primacy of wealth creation if we are going to deliver those objectives. And he does not see that wealth creation, that capitalism, as Tim rightly says, actually has a moral purpose. And by attacking wealth creation, both in his rhetoric and if he were to be elected in his actions, he would take this country backwards to those 1970s that I spoke of, with an orgy of higher taxation and regulation. I remember the 1970s. I wouldn't want to go back there. It was a nasty, grim, petty epoch of really, really foul racism, frankly, and union-dominated economy. Why would you want? Miliband wants to take us back to the 1970s. UKIP, as I say, UKIP wants to go back to a mythical version of the 1950s that didn't exist even then. The Greens probably want to take us to some time around about the middle of the Bronze Age, shortly before the emergence of the Beaker people. And the Liberal Democrats would probably settle for any epoch when they're above 5% in the polls. We Conservatives are the only party presenting itself for election in just 37 days' time, that thinks that, on the whole, today, broadly speaking, is better than yesterday. And broadly speaking, tomorrow is going to be better than today. Am I not right? And we are the only party presenting itself for election that is prepared actively to stand up for the system that is going to deliver that progress and that result. A system that is allowing Londoners now, in my city, to live longer, more fruitful, and, as I say, more equal lives. Totally unbelievable. And that is why I urge you to support this venture tonight, to support Tim and the Legatum Institute and everybody contained therein, and to support capitalism and in all its glory and its moral purpose, and to support wealth creation with a moral purpose, and of course, thereby, to elect a sensible, moderate, dynamic, one nation, but tax-cutting Conservative government under David Cameron. Thank you very much. Thank you.
To hear more podcasts from the Legatum Institute, please visit our iTunes channel or website at www.li.com.